This show is supported by State Farm. You have insurance for your home, your health, and your car. Why don't you have insurance for your small business? So many small business owners think they don't need or don't even know about small business insurance. Protecting a source of revenue is one thing, but so is protecting all of your hard work and your team members. State Farm agents are all small business owners too, so they know how to help small business owners choose personalized policies that fit their budgets. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.
Tell me about like one or two of your favorite games or projects you've worked on.
I will go with one that happened very recently.
Welcome to Game Dev Advice, the Game Developers Podcast, your place for resources and in-depth conversations with other game development professionals. I'm your host, John J.P. Podlasic. I've worked at 10 different game companies, starting back in 1989 with the TurboGrafx-16. Over the decades, I've developed games like Mortal Kombat, Avengers Initiative, Beavis and Butthead, and numerous others. I now work for a startup called Level X. But this podcast isn't about me. It's about you and the game development community. So if you have questions or ideas, give a call, 224-484-7733, or go to the gamedevadvice.com website. So let's kick things off with the new Game Dev Advice.
Tonight's episode is with Glenn DeLeon, a talented 3D artist heading up creative teams that have developed games including Star Wars The Old Republic, Borderlands 3, Friday the 13th, The Game, and The Sims. He's currently working from his home in Monterrey, Nuevo León, Mexico, and welcomes other artists to reach out since he's passionate about helping others level up their skills and finding their way in the industry. He also asks me some questions I wasn't prepared for, so enjoy. Hi, Glenn. Where are you calling in from tonight?
Hey, John. I'm calling from the meat capital of Mexico, Monterrey, Nuevo León.
Ah, the meat capital. Very nice. So how are you doing down there and dealing with COVID and all those kind of things?
Well, it's been an extremely long and tedious process. It has been, almost 2 years already?
Yeah.
Especially in Mexico, things have been moving along very slowly, and most things are still closed, and even vaccination rates and all of that is a little bit slow. Personally, there are some things that I have enjoyed during this time.
Okay.
I think it was pretty interesting at the beginning when people had to adapt to this new reality of working from home, because I know it's not like that for everybody. Even though it's very common for artists, sometimes they work like that.
Yeah.
Up until that point, when just pandemic started and all of that, I was already working from home for maybe, I don't know, like 2 years and a half. So at first it wasn't like a huge change in my life, but it was very interesting to see how everybody had to adapt to the same things I went through at the beginning.
Right.
And I appreciate it because now they were able to relate to how things were for me. Hearing about people being happy about working all day in pyjamas or it was very interesting. And even the complex and more difficult stuff, like I don't know if you experience this because you're also working from home, but it's sometimes it becomes a little bit overwhelming when the place where you work is also the place where you're supposed to be resting.
Because it's sometimes like, all right, stop and walk up the stairs and tap out, because when you're in the same spot and I have a office down here and it's always like, I have to stop doing this, because you just kind of get into your groove and you lose track of time. So you have to create those boundaries, and I set timers now on my phone to be like, hey dummy, go upstairs, stop.
It's so easy to just be always on and just not having a limit of when you need to stop.
But right.
All in all, it has been it's good. I'm used to this now, and I'm glad that I can relate with other people now working in the same situation.
So tell me about your current role as a 3D artist.
Yeah, I'm currently a 3D lead working for this studio called Devoted. It's a studio based in LA. Okay. I'm in charge of just leading teams that are creating art that's going to be seen in the final game. That's basically the gist of it. I make sure that the artists follow the instructions that at any given project, and I give them art direction when they need. Like, we need to keep consistent. Mm-hmm. Art direction of the game is going in the right direction and stays consistent between all of the assets and things right. like this. I'm also responsible for providing feedback on all of this and helping junior artists to level up in their own skills, basically.
Yeah.
I used to be on the other side. I used to be the artist that had to work with leads, and mm-hmm. I think through the years it helped me and understand a different way through experience, I guess.
Yeah.
Now I'm working as a lead, and now I'm the one guiding other artists, which has been very interesting.
Right. Yeah. Doing the drawovers and red markup and giving the art direction, and here's the art Bible, air quotes, and stuff like that. Right.
Yeah, it's a little bit different now because you're less focused on art. Sometimes mm-hmm. it's a little bit more on the manager side.
Okay. Right.
Just managing people, talking to clients, things like that. But it has its own pros. I think you're able to learn a lot just by understanding the project to a point where you can also explain it in a simple way to a different artist, so they are able to understand it too. So yeah. That's something I was not expecting to happen, but it has been helping me. It has mm-hmm. helped me a lot to learn in a different way.
You have to kind of maybe convert and speak to the artist in the way that makes sense, so they can make the assets and do the art the way that works for the game. So that's cool. How did you get started in the game industry?
I think that's interesting because I've been thinking about this. It's funny because even though I'm working from Mexico and I'm in Mexico and I started here, I think mm-hmm. my story is pretty similar in some ways to other people that are part of this industry, where I started just as a fan of video games.
Right.
You know, ever since the moment as a little kid when I had an SNES controller in my hands, I was pretty much doomed for life. You know, it has been definitely different because I was basically a fan, but there's no industry here in Mexico. There's
right.
definitely no, or it's still pretty new. I never thought I could be able to achieve this dream of, someday I'm going to be working on the games that I grew up with playing.
It's probably abstract, right? So like, wow, I love games, but how do you actually make them? So how'd you get that first break? Like, where did you get that first job to start?
Just right after college, I was super lucky. Mm-hmm. There was a new studio, an outsourcing game studio that just opened up there in my city in Monterrey. Okay. It's called CGBot. And that's the only place to this day, that and another one, that they do game art. So I applied, and 1 week after college, I joined, and I was already working there. But
wow.
I was still pretty new. I was still pretty, I didn't know a lot of things. It's an interesting thing because all of the talent and all of the workers that are there are entirely Mexican. So it's weird to think that even though you are from apart, you're still able to contribute to the same teams that are working on the main games, on the AAA games and things like that. That's basically where I started learning everything about the pipeline, everything about, even the ace. Being able to tell when something doesn't look good, when something looks good.
Like art direction and stuff like that.
Yeah. That's how I started. The thing is, this is an issue about the industry in Mexico. We don't really have a good way. There are not many outlets to display or to where you can be a part of mm-hmm. workforce because there's not existence.
Okay.
So it always opens the opportunity to, I don't know, if you don't work there, maybe you can work in any other place, right? So sometimes it's difficult to, like, for example, have the same level or same salary, for example, that you would have in an actual studio outside of Mexico, right?
Yeah.
You know, I spent 4 years there working. Mm-hmm. I went through a lot of different projects. That's the cool part. The people there are very talented. I was able to work on games like Star Wars or Sims or... Even cool. Star Citizen. I think at this point, everybody worked on Star Citizen. some point in their life.
Right.
Yeah, during all of that time, I also spent my free time practicing and just trying to improve. It has always been the goal to just pursue other opportunities and being able to, yeah. I don't know, just look outside of what's here, really.
No, that's smart that you did that, right? Because, like, you know, it sounds like you're improving your skills, doing new things at night, and getting better at your craft, right? Because that's the way to rise in the industry and get better and do new stuff, not like just zone out and watch Netflix, right? Like, you have to, you know, you're a craftsperson, right? You have to get better at your craft. So, you know, that's key. So what do you wish you had known when you'd started as an artist? Like, thinking back when you get that first job.
Oh, that's an interesting question. I think that the answer for that question has been changing throughout the years. Right now, I feel like what it's very important to know for when you're a beginner is, I wish I would have been able to understand that this career and the pursuit of just mastery, especially on a craft and an art, like a creative outlet, like it's game art, it should be a marathon and not a sprint. Because I used to have this philosophy where I was going to achieve my dream and I was going to pursue my goal and I was going to do it at any cost. It didn't matter if it if I lose any sleep, if I don't take care of myself, it doesn't matter if in the end I achieve what I wanted. But that's a very destructive way of thinking about this, especially when this is something that you're going to be doing for a long, long time. And if you want to not burn yourself out.
Yeah, exactly. Burnout is what I was thinking of. Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, the reality is if you're tired all the time and if you're suffering from burnout, art and creative doesn't come from that place. It cannot exist, really. It's very difficult if you sit every day and just hate what you're seeing on the screen because you're so tired, then that's not worth doing. I think it's very important to know and think about those things. And it's very easy to miss when you're just starting out. Like I was at the beginning, I was young, I was full of energy, I was full of dreams. And I just wanted to keep going. And even though it's still fun and you can do it, it's better to have some degree of balance. Especially if you want to keep doing this for a long time.
Right. Yeah. If you don't want to crash and burn, right, you have to pace yourself a little bit. What advice would you give someone looking to get their first job as an artist? Like, put yourself in your shoes, you know, in 2021 here.
I guess it depends on where you are located, because I think it might be easier if you live in a place where you have much more opportunities. There are more studios, maybe if you're living in the US.
Right.
But there's something that's common and it's always going to be the main essential part in any place you live. Working on your portfolio and having a good set of artworks is the most important thing you're going to have.
Exactly.
That's the key that's going to open every door wherever you go. That's basically, as long as you have a good portfolio, there's always going to be an opportunity for you. Yep. And how do you create that? How do you make sure you have a good portfolio? Well, that's where you spend all the time doing, which is practice and honing your craft. And not every type of practice is good practice. There's this concept of deliberate practice, which is, this means that you're not just working mindlessly without a goal in mind. It's not just going on autopilot. It's also working on trying to improve your weak spots and, you know, the things that you know you struggled with. I've seen this happen and it happened to me too. I started actually wanting to be a concept artist, and I remember I used to draw characters with the hands on the back because I found that hands are very difficult to draw. So
if you don't see them, then they look fine. Right?
Yeah, they have them in their pockets. You know, I don't have to draw them. Yeah. Right. So that's not, if you always practice what you're already good at, you're not going to improve.
Right, I'm going to grow. Yeah.
Yeah. You have to focus on the things that are going to make the change, and just spending time on the things that would give you the better chance of at growing.
Yeah.
So I think it's a very important thing to remember, especially if you're trying to break into the industry. It's also important to try and find one mentor because it's going to be easier if there's someone guiding you. And I know it's difficult to find, or maybe not everybody has the means, or they can go to college or whatever, but everybody has internet. Everybody can have access to the forums. I used to post all of my stuff in this place called Polycan. I think every A3D artist knows it.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. Yeah, so you can receive feedback from those places. And yeah, there's always people that want to help others. And that's a good way of growing. And after that, it's important to visit places like ArtStation and post your stuff online. This is also an advice that I received, and I think it's true. When you're starting out and you're just getting yourself, you want to get yourself known, it's a good strategy to work on fan art. You work on fan art to attract people that already know and are fond of, I don't know, maybe a known IP. And that's how you attract them, and you hope they stay for your personal work.
Oh, I see. Kind of lure them in with the Star Wars concepts. And
That's the trap. You make them think that it's going to be all Star Wars, but then they find all your artwork.
Right, yeah.
If it's good, they will stay. But it's good to post to ArtStation for all of this, because I know, and it even happens with the studio I work for now, all the recruiters use ArtStation to go and find talent. And that's where they recruit everybody. And I've seen many people just start their careers, and that's how mine started too, in some ways.
We look at artist portfolios frequently, and I'll share with the art director, and they'll be like, what? They don't have an ArtStation page? It's like, what are they doing, right? And it's some Wix dot whatever site, and it's like, oh man, this is a low rent, right? Like, no, like it's free, you know, get the ArtStation, put in the effort and have a great reel, because that as an artist, you know, you live and die by that, right? So like,
It's also important to, I mean, I learned this the hard way. It's always important to have your portfolio ready, because you don't know when an opportunity is going to come, it's going to appear. And well, you don't have your portfolio ready. You cannot even try it and make an attempt to take it, because you don't have it.
Yeah, and those opportunities come, and it's not like you can just schedule them and you map it all out. Like, you know, somebody be like, "Hey, what are you doing?" And oh, here's my ArtStation. And you know, something happens because you're ready. And if you're not ready, and you're like, "Oh, I'll get back to you in 2 weeks," it's gone, right? Like,
someone else is in line to take.
What about advice for other artists like yourself in the career right now that are wanting to say progress and get further and be an art director like yourself and other kind of things?
I've seen this happen, and there's a lot of value in working on personal artwork with you being the one art directing yourself. This is an issue that happens sometimes where I see work from other people and I wonder, are they good or the one leading him the good one? This happens in studio, where people are able to reach higher levels because they have guidance, and they never get to practice the critical eye and the critical thinking about is really good, is this not good. I started developing those skills when I started working on personal artwork, and I was not following like instructions from an art director or a lead artist, because it was around what I considered to be good, rather than making sure that Star Wars looks like Star Wars, for example, which is also good, but you don't get to practice, or you don't get to solve those problems when they already solved for you. So in this case, I think it's really valuable to spend the time doing that. Like, for example, some of the works that I've done that are personal, the one you see is version number 5, because I already went through other 4 versions that I didn't like, because I was still iterating on them and just deciding like, hey, this is not good enough. If I look this piece against other pieces that have similar stuff of what I want. Does it fit? Does it not fit? How much is left to reach that level? What do I need to do? And you also ask for feedback and all of that. But in the end, it's very important to be able to say if something needs to be improved. That's also something, that's also a way of evolving from just an artist to someone who can review other artists, that can see if something is not done the best way or is something that still can be improved. Okay. I think that's very valuable for people. I know that this industry sometimes doesn't leave a lot of time to work on personal things, but even with your own assets and inside the studio, if you are reviewing yourself, if you're art directing yourself, it's very valuable for that, I think.
Right. So there's a little bit of diversity in your portfolio and stuff like that when you have a mix of your own stuff and stuff that you worked on for games and stuff to show a range. So you talked a little about this earlier, but like, what's your advice for developing interpersonal skills, you know, EQ, the soft skills for like managing other artists?
Probably the most important thing is, you know, and I'm probably going to focus on teamwork, is to remember that you're working with other people and other humans. And, you know, it's about treating other people with respect and just being able to be a team player with them and remembering that, and this is very important because I've seen what happens when you don't, is to remember that every single part of that team is just makes one team, and they are not competing against each other.
Yeah.
And, you know, if they have success, you will also have success because you're part of the same team.
Mm-hmm.
So you have now a reason to wanting to help others. And, I've known artists, for example, that they like to hoard knowledge. They don't like to help others, and they don't like to show their processes. They don't like to show the way they work. Or if someone is struggling with something, they just leave them to suffer.
Right, right. It's a bad mindset.
Because they think that gives them an advantage because they are the only ones that know.
Yeah. I'll hold on to this and no one else will have it. And then I'll be the star, right? Yeah.
Yeah, it's like the diva type.
Right, totally. Totally diva. Yeah.
And in reality, what ends up happening is that no one wants to work with those guys because they are not easy to work with. And, you know, when you're going to spend hours and hours every day, you hope that you don't find one of those in your your team. You know, and also learning how to be able to communicate just instructions and giving clear feedback or saying what you want in a you know, in a very understandable way. I think it's something that just always you know, it's a way to avoid problems and avoid issues down the line.
Right.
And also when you have more experience than the new guy, for example, you have an opportunity to be a leader and just give direction, because obviously they're not the ones that are gonna be able to tell. You're the one with experience, you're the one with the knowledge. Just use it and just work with your own team.
No, it's it kind of be a mentor and help them get better, because then, you know, rising tide raises all boats, or whatever that phrase is. So
earlier, a few years ago, I work on a Sims game, and I remember being very fond of that experience because I grew up playing the Sims too.
Okay.
So it was one of the first times where I was working on something like, this feels like I'm working now in the game industry, because I recognize this name. I recognize, I dream about working on this. And
now you're contributing to it. Yeah.
Hey, hope you're enjoying the show. If you are, please go to patreon.com/gamedevadvice. We'd love to see if you can support the show and help new episodes keep coming out. That's patreon.com/gamedevadvice. Thanks.
This show is supported by State Farm. Insurance is a part of any solid financial plan. making sure you have the important things in life covered is one of the best ways to give yourself a little breathing room when things go awry. It's important to protect not only your business, but yourself as a business owner and all current and future team members. State Farm agents know what it takes to run and protect a small business because State Farm agents are all small business owners and they live and work in your community. So they're deeply attuned to what's happening with other small businesses in your market. If you have a small business and are interested in making sure you're protected, reach out to your local State Farm agent to learn more about what you need. They'll help you find the right policy at the right price for your business. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.
Yeah, now I'm adding to it for someone else to enjoy. Yeah, it was pretty interesting.
Yeah, and to date myself, like, man, SimCity 2000, I used to play the hell out of that game, and it was way back when it was really more about kind of a resource management when you would zone different parts of the land and wire up the plumbing and the electricity and all that kind of stuff. And it's wild just how that whole franchise has continued to grow and evolve, because it's SimCity 2000 is very different from the current Sims and or even the Sims from 10 years ago. So hats off to EA for pulling that off. It's such a killer game or franchise, I should say. So
yeah, at some point you're just living a different life inside the game.
Like, wait a minute, I played that, now I'm making stuff for that. Like, is this real? So what, as a gamer and as an artist, what are you curious about right now in the industry?
I'm very intrigued to see what type of games are going to be released in this generation. Mm-hmm. You know how the PlayStation and Series X are still pretty, pretty new. Yeah. I think we, to this point, we don't have any true next-gen title that has been able to showcase all of the jump in technology we had from the last generation.
Right, the power.
I want to see what's going to happen, because also the new Unreal Engine was released just very recently. And mm-hmm. I don't know if you got the chance to see the tech demo they showed.
I've heard about it.
And as an artist, they were doing some pretty, some crazy stuff, really. I was wondering, like, when are we going to see those things? you know, when are we going to see that graphical fidelity in an actual game?
Right.
Because that's a demo, right? And right. It's to get you hyped. But
right.
When is the time I'm going to see that in a game? Yeah. I want to see more studios experiment more with what they can create now. I'm looking forward to what's next.
What about potential threats for the game industry?
I think the biggest one for me is I don't want to live in a world where the sequel world, where everything is a sequel from a franchise that was already successful.
Right.
I don't know. We're already on Final Fantasy 15, so I don't know. It might be already happening.
Right.
But yeah, I think that's a threat to the industry. I hope we don't always go with the low risk option. I hope we mm-hmm. we can see more
diversity innovation. Totally. You touched about this earlier, but like, what are your thoughts about VR and AR?
For VR, actually, I very recently tried that one for the first time. I got the Oculus Quest, I think.
Zuckerberg knows, man. What are you doing?
I never tried it. I always saw it as a gimmick, because the first time we saw things like that, I think, was when, I don't know, it started with, what was the name, in the Wii era when we have motion controls, then it evolved with the Kinect. And I mean, I saw all of those things as gimmicks and just things that didn't add a lot of value. And it was going to be something that I would be tired of playing really quickly. But you know, when I tried it and I was playing Beat Saber and getting my ass kicked.
and sweating, you're like, man, this is exhausting. Where's my cardio at?
Yeah, but it feels like you're there, and it feels like you are actually interacting with the world in a different way. And I got pretty excited about it. Mm-hmm. And after I tried this with in an Oculus that wasn't mine, but after that, I just went and buy one, because I wanted to try it at home. And yeah. I want to see more things like that. And I want to see more games like Half-Life Alyx, for example. Where
I was playing that for a while. Yeah, I need to go back to that.
Yeah, yeah, it's pretty cool. And I wonder, actually, a few years later, mm-hmm. how are we going to see, how are we going to look back on this and think about it? Like, I wonder if people right. felt the same way when they were playing the Virtual Boy. I think that was the name.
I remember that. I'm old enough to remember that. Yeah, it was vector graphics, it just red lines, and it gave everybody migraines, and it was one of Nintendo's big flops. But yeah, it was pioneering, but it was ahead of its time. And yeah, the Virtual Boy was strange. Yeah, Google that. It was weird.
But I wonder if we're going to look back at it and see, like, and I think, like, whoa, what a primitive technology they used to have fun with. I don't know.
Right. Like the Nintendo Power Glove. What is that?
They're yeah. Just, yeah. So I'm very excited to see how that's going to evolve. I know that, especially, I mean, we don't have the same ability to create games up to the same standard that we do for non-VR games. So I wonder if they're going to match at some point, and if you're going to be able to play, I don't know, God of War in VR, for example.
Oh, right. Yeah, because frame rate's so important. And, to have that level of fidelity and have that level of frame rate, because when the frame rate is weak, it makes people nauseous, and it's a very bad experience. But yeah, it'll get there, right? Is it 5 years or 8 years or 4 years from now? But yeah. So transitioning, like, what's a funny or odd story from your years of working in the game industry?
Let me think about it.
Because everything was totally normal, right? Like, it was just normal days, nothing weird.
No, not at all.
I'm totally kidding.
Yeah. So I think, I mean, you can kind of get used to, I guess, certain routine, especially when you're working at a studio. Mm-hmm. I mean, I spent 4 years working at a Mexican studio.
Yeah,
but when I switched and started working for a foreign studio, mm-hmm. it was very interesting to see how it was multicultural. Like, I was the only Mexican at some point, so uh-huh. It's very interesting to work with Eastern people. Mm-hmm. Just there are a lot of people working, and they are super talented that come from Ukraine.
Right,
but I have a very specific way of communicating where I was talking to this friend. He was saying, like, the Western always tries to talk all the time, and they want to chat with everybody. We just want to say our thing, be direct, and get to the point, and get back to work.
Right.
I thought it was pretty funny, because I used to think that people were angry at me.
Yeah, why are they not saying anything? But that's just how they operate. Yeah, you're right. In Ukraine and Eastern Europe is very just terse with their words and direct.
But it's very interesting, because they feel... Oh, that's the way they feel comfortable working. Mm-hmm. Now you get the you learn how to work with them, and you also remove all the fluff and just give them what they want, so they can be happy too. Yeah,
right. Yeah. What about games you're playing now, or you're excited about?
I'm playing Fire Emblem Three Houses. I've been slowly going at it because I'm always busy now. So it's a very fun game. Very
who makes that? I've not heard of it.
That's from, it's on the Nintendo Switch. I'm blanking right now on who makes it.
On the Switch, okay.
Yeah, but it's a really good game. I'm very excited right now about the next Horizon Zero Dawn. I was looking at the trailer and just looking at gameplay, and they were showing the environments, and I think in those environments, there are like 5 mobile games inside. Like, you have the budget to create 5 mobile games just with the budget they use for Geometry. I don't know. It's pretty exciting to see.
So is there anything I should have asked you about but didn't? Any thoughts or ideas you have about anything?
Well, I don't know. I'm going to take this opportunity to ask you some questions. I know
it has been...
What games do you like to play? What keeps you inspired after working on the industry for so long?
I'm kind of lame. I don't play a lot of games like Abe's Odyssey. You know, just something just kind of relax and just kind of chill out. I'm not the gamer I used to be. Like with my sons, we used to hook up the Xbox and have the steering wheel and play Forza and all that kind of stuff. But for me now, it's more just about short snippets and kind of playing casual games like Abe's Odyssey and just kind of chilling out and just trying to string together some jumps and do that kind of stuff. So That's kind of a bad answer, but that's kind of what I do know.
No, I totally understand. Like, it's more and more difficult to have time to play games. It has happened to me. Like, you join this industry wanting to create games because you love them, but now you don't have time to play them.
Yeah, I mean, I grew up playing games in the arcade during, like, Stranger Things, right? Like, I was in high school in the 80s, so that's where you play games, and I was very passionate about going to the arcade and playing Tron and Spy Hunter and Joust, and I'm very fortunate to have worked with people who made those games when I was at Midway. You know, I was kind of like Wayne's World. I'm not worthy, right, like, to be able to work with those people that made the games that I grew up with. But yeah, as life's evolved and I've been doing other things, I've just focused more on mobile and doing kind of small bursts of games versus sitting down for a 3-hour experience.
Yeah, that's incredible. I mean, I know those games were before I was born, but I went back and played a lot of games. Like, yeah, I still enjoy Joust and a lot of the classic games for sure.
Yeah, there's great mechanics, and they were so efficient with how they use their resources, right? Like, they had just snippets for graphics and snippets for audio, and they made these really compelling experiences just based on your mind to kind of fill in the blanks. Sometimes it wasn't so immersive. You're just, you know, you would see those things beyond what was on the screen, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and sometimes I prefer games like that. You know, when you don't have that much time, having a game that's simple, that has a game loop easy to understand, that is satisfying. Yeah. It's preferable than, I don't know, I have to 100 markers in the map because everybody wants something from me.
Right. Or you go online and you're just cannon fodder, right? Because it's like, I'm trying to learn this and it was just destroying me. I'm getting, you know, owned by 13-year-olds. I don't need the degree. Yeah. Anything else you want to know about me or?
Let me think about it. Would you say Mortal Kombat is your favorite project you have worked on?
Yeah,
were you a fan before working on that game?
You know, I played a lot of Mortal Kombat 2 on the console, and
it's my favorite is 3.
3? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of weird because I was managing QA at Viacom New Media, which was the video game division of Viacom, the mega corporation behind MTV and all those kind of things. And we would, people would take breaks, play MK2 in my manager's office, and that was like the thing to do all the time. So I didn't have the, from MK1 through MK4 in the arcade experience, people might assume, but it was exciting to work on that, to work with talented people, to be part of a game, part of a franchise that would sell millions and millions of units. And for me personally, just to see what the, I think it was the MPD, kind of like the sales charts and stuff like that, to see the game when we would be number one for a couple of weeks in October, before damn GTA would come out and just like, GTA just sucked the life out of the whole industry. Yeah. But, to work on that and just be part of that kind of storied franchise, I was proud of that. And,
was it for you? How did you join the industry? Did you always knew that that you wanted to work on that?
I was an artist before there were 3D artists, if that makes sense. Wow. Yeah. It was back when there were 2D artists, and I had an art scholarship and I went to school. I got into computer graphics in the early days in the mid 80s when it was very rudimentary and difficult. And in the back of my mind, growing up in arcades, I always wanted to work in games. I remember saying that to a friend of mine, which I forgot, but my mother had remembered. And I got a job in 1989 at the TurboGrafx, which was a system that competed with the Sega Genesis. So it never took off. It never was never like a Genesis or the Super Nintendo, like you mentioned. And it was by NEC, and I was on the hotline phone, and you couldn't get you get stuck at level 4 on Keith Courage in the Alpha Zone, which was the bundle game. So I would give people tips on the phone, and the phone would ring, and I would pick up the phone, and we would talk people through how to beat and bosses. And that was a part-time job, and then it was a full-time job, and then it became a career. So it was weird to study art and then just do this on the side because I was going to go into advertising, and all of a sudden it turned into this career that I guess I've been planning for my whole life, but I hadn't intentionally planned for.
Stumble a bit into the
I stumbled into something I was prepared for, I guess.
Yeah. It's really cool to hear that you work on giving advice to people for the games. I heard that Nintendo had something similar.
Yes. Yes. You know, it's funny. They had their own hotline phone, and a friend of mine, Hans Lowe, Hans L-O, who is an awesome person and a producer. He was the producer on Mortal Kombat after I left to pursue other options and ideas. Mm-hmm. And he and I did the same job about 2,000 miles apart back at the same time. So he was answering the hotline phone at Nintendo, and I was answering the hotline phone at TurboGrafx, and TurboGrafx obviously crashed and burned, and Nintendo crushed everybody. So it was funny because we had the same career trajectory. We were just at two different companies. He was at the winner, and I was at the loser. So
I always wanted to call something like that because I needed help, definitely.
Well, there's no internet, right? Like, what are you going to do? You know, you can't just Google it. There was magazines. It was either you look at a magazine, or you call the number, and that's
what's I enjoyed that part when you were not able to look for the answer because it turned into, it would become like a rumor, things that would happen in a game. Like, I remember hearing like, hey, if you shoot an arrow to the sun in Ocarina of Time, you will receive a fire arrow. I'm like, what? Really?
Right. And
Now, like now you're
like, what about this? I heard you do this, and this thing happens. All right, I'm going to go try it tonight.
Yeah. And now you can just Google anything. So.
Right. Yeah. It takes some of the mystery away. It takes the excitement because it's like, I'm going to try that. Wait a minute. That was bullshit. That didn't work. Or like, holy crap, that actually worked. Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes I force myself to not look at anything, and I get stuck, and I never touch the game again because I'm
stubborn.
I'm too stubborn to
You're like, I'm not going to cheat. Yeah, because that was the other thing too. There used to be the Game Shark, which was a device. That would let you. The listeners that don't know what this is, you would plug it into this your game into that, and it would unlock things so you could basically cheat and create like unlimited deaths or whatever as a way to kind of speed your way through games and basically cheat. So that was a whole, and then there were the console people were like trying to sue them, if I remember right. And
I don't remember this.
Because it was it kind of worked around what their agreement was for their hardware, and it became like, well, you can't do that. And but there was a demand because people were like, I want to be able to just get through this game, because back then the games were a lot, in some ways, Dark Souls or whatever excluded. But the games were a lot harder, right? So it was just really frustrating. And the checkpoints, because the limitations might have been very far apart, so people would get frustrated. So they were looking for ways to expedite that.
So there has been always a way.
Always a way, there's always a way around it. Definitely. So where can people find you online? Like website, Twitter, stuff like that?
Well, you can find me on ArtStation as Glenn De Leon. I think it appears as G De Leon, and on LinkedIn as G De Leon Art. I'm going to send you the links. Because
send me the links. I'll put the links in the show notes. And
if anybody wants to contact me or wants a portfolio review or whatever, I'm always open to help.
Wow.
Something I do every day anyway, so.
Cool. It's very generous.
Beginner.
No, it's cool that you do that, right? Like, cause people sometimes when they get to a certain level, they're like, I don't have time for that. I'm too busy. I'm a big shot, blah, blah, blah. But no, that's great that you want to give back to the community and give people feedback. And hats off to you for doing that.
Yeah, no problem. I think it's important to give back. And I remember when I asked one of my favorite artists for advice, and I was sure that she wasn't going to answer, but in the end she gave me advice, and I was like, oh wow,
right,
she's really cool because she helps others. And I always thought like, when I'm close to there, I'm gonna help others too.
No, and that's great that she did that for you, and that you kept your word and you did that, or you're doing that now for other people. So that's cool. That pay it forward, right? Like that's the thing to do. Last question, like, what's one piece of advice you'd give others working in the game industry right now?
An interesting question. I think a piece of advice would be to just, in order to improve, just remember that it's important to always work on personal artwork. It's easy to fall into the trap of just working for other people's ideas,
right?
Which sometimes can be very draining when you don't have a creative outlet for expressing yourself.
Yeah.
So always try to work on things that you enjoy, because in the end, even though this is your work and your job, it's also art and it's also something you enjoy doing. And
right.
Remember to actually enjoy working on it. It's easy to just become a machine that produces 3D assets.
Yeah,
it can be very bland if you go that way. So take care of yourself, go outside, also see the family, see new experiences. Everything always comes back to what you're creating. So
yeah. No, it's great advice, right? Yeah, don't just be only focused on your work. Like, have those pet projects, those things that you're passionate about, the things that you're interested in, and do those, because they'll make you more, you know, kind of well-rounded. Plus, you know, it's good for your mental health. And yeah, you're right. Step away from the computer sometimes. See friends and family. Get a break.
Yeah, definitely.
And take time for yourself. Well, cool. Thank you, Glenn, for your time tonight. I appreciate this call.
Thank you so much for the opportunity, and it was very cool to meet you.
Cool. Yeah. Nice to meet you. Take care.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Game Dev Advice, the Game Developers Podcast. Go to the website at gamedevadvice.com, and you can find the show notes along with show notes for all the other episodes. Please also check out the new Patreon page at patreon.com/gamedevadvice. Have a lot of options up there for how you can support the show. Again, that's patreon.com/gamedevadvice. Thanks again for listening and being part of the show. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks to State Farm for supporting this show and helping our listeners protect their businesses and lives. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.